Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, co-host of this program for the last 16 years, along with Gary Baker and a whole bunch of other people. And we certainly have a whole bunch of other people in studio today. We're going to be taking a look at the implications of the Mobile World Congress and all these devices in our hands. What happens to our security when we get all these ways of connecting to data? We'll also be talking about civic hacking, among other things, and answering your questions here on the Internet Advisor. Don't go away. Welcome to the Internet Advisor once again. Foster Brown with you. And we have just a whole bunch of people here in studio looking forward to a great conversation today and delighted that you allowed us into your lives here through the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker, of course, with me. Good to see you again, Larry.
We're getting ready to advise, eh?
That's exactly it. Got our pencils out. We're all set. Protractors and slide rules, right, Ed Rudell?
My kids don't call it advice.
Meddling, I think.
And one of the other advisors who gets no respect either is Gal Carson.
Once a week, another cornucopia of craziness.
Delighted to have you guys here in studio. We also are going to be introducing, matter of fact, I'll bring him in right now. Professor Jeff Inglesby is with us. He is an assistant professor and department chair at the University of Detroit Mercy in the Center for Cybersecurity and Intelligence Studies. That doesn't mean high IQs necessarily, right?
Oh, not at all. No.
But certainly it is.
Yeah, in my case, I suppose it is.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. We'll make an exception for that.
And soon your students, that yes. They just have to take your class. So.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we threatened to have some of your students in here, didn't we? We talked about getting them in.
Yeah, they're anxious.
Well, Jeff is here to help us get some perspective on the Mobile World Congress. This came out recently, this last week, a whole bunch of stuff coming out of there. And maybe just some general comments. And then, Jeff, I'd be interested in talking about some of the security concerns that came out of this. But maybe just some overview. One of the things that struck me about this Mobile World Congress we've just come out of, and folks, if you haven't heard about it, was in Barcelona, Spain. It has really become, I think, even bigger in some ways than the Consumer Electronics Show in the sense of the importance of the stuff that comes out there, not necessarily volume.
It's certainly bigger in Barcelona than you know, CES.
Yes, okay. But I mean, in terms of, now come on, don't be too facetious there. I mean, in terms of some of the key technical stuff that's happening.
Certainly, it's Europe-oriented in some respects, and that's what we saw, right? Some of the results coming out have been a lot of around some of the phone companies that are over there, Jeff. Probably lots of announcements that you may not see as much of here.
Or even phones that we'll see here.
Right.
Yeah, Nokia is a good example.
Right, right.
And we didn't see it. That's not as popular here or not as significant here,
right,
because it's targeted towards the developing nations.
Right. Right. And that was a phrase you heard all week long. Well, it was developing nations. What was the other one? Emerging nations or whatever. You know, the notion was that, and this is what I see is significant, because in many ways the markets are saturated to some extent here in, if you will, the first world. Now, of course, there are people who can buy more smartphones, but in terms of that hockey puck or the hockey stick of uptake, there's huge futures out there in the emerging world.
Sure. Well, that's where the growth is, right?
That's exactly it. And that's where you see them really putting their money. And so this Nokia, I'm interested in hearing your comments on this. Nokia came out with a device that was running essentially an Android. Let me put it this way. The motor in the vehicle was Android, but a lot of the stuff around it looked an awful lot like Windows Phone.
Absolutely. They use AOSP, the Android Open Source Project, as the engine that was going to drive the phone. But if you look at it, it looks a lot like a Windows phone.
Absolutely.
And if you've had any of the other Nokia phones, their original operating system.
Symbian?
No.
Symbian? No, the Asha phones are out of it, I think.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And so they have, it's kind of a mishmash, and it was really really interesting to speculate now what's going to happen now that Windows, or Microsoft rather, has kind of finalized this deal with to buy Nokia.
Yeah. Now, some people were saying, and I wonder, do you think this was like, is this a good or bad thing, do you think, for Microsoft in the future, guys? I don't know if you've given some thought to that, but what do you think? Is this a good or bad? Have they caved into Android, and is this going to sink Windows Phone, for instance? I don't know, Cal.
I don't think they caved in. I think what they're doing is taking advantage of a typical marketing technique, and that is do something different to separate you from what may have not been a quite as successful marketing endeavor. Try something a little bit different, even though you'll still reap the rewards of the market. You're just going to get it from a different way.
One of the things people said and is that it was kind of like it's the gateway drug to Microsoft, you know, in a sense that what they're getting people on are the Microsoft services, and Microsoft is moving into this devices and services thing. So they have what SkyDrive now is OneDrive. You've got some of the other things, Outlook.com, that they hook up with, and also the Nokia and Nokia Here, their maps and things like that. So it's like getting them into those services. Forget who cares what app brings them in there. The important thing is this environment, this ambient that they're in.
Well, I think the other trick on that is, you know, you talk about emerging countries, or it used to be called third world countries,
right.
And because of that, I don't think they can go in and market first world products in third world countries, because they'd have to reduce the price. Therefore, the people in the first world country would go like, hey, what's the deal here?
Yeah.
So you come out with a different line that's something a little bit different, that sort of thing, so that you can market at a lower price level out there without destroying the current market that you have in front of you.
Yeah, Ed, were you going to say something? I'm sorry, I didn't.
No, I thought that was amazing.
One of the things people have said, and it's kind of interesting, is that in these emerging markets, people don't have computers. They have their phones.
Right.
And their phones essentially become their major computing device. So what this is doing, what Nokia has done essentially, is at a very relatively low price, have given people across the world a gateway into this internet experience.
Yeah, and what's really interesting here is that you're talking $120.
Yeah.
For this phone. And so I was at the World Bank on Thursday and listened to a couple of speakers talk about how in some of these countries, children are getting their phones before they're getting a good pair of shoes.
Wow.
And this is
hugely
significant. It's significant because they don't have the infrastructure there to do the...
all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, hold that thought, because I want to come back to that in just a moment. We're going to continue talking with Professor Jeff Inglesby about this and about the security concerns that are rising as well. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. With us in studio today, we are delighted to have Professor Jeff Inglesby, who is with the University of Detroit Mercy. He's with the Center for Cybersecurity and Intelligence Studies. Jeff, I you're kind of unceremoniously cut off. I wanted you to keep up with the point that you're making, because before the break, we were talking about the difference in this experience of having a phone. For us, it's kind of like a luxury. We could do without it. So, well, I don't know if any more I could do without it.
I was just going to say, that's a luxury? No way. Not in our household.
It's become a staple. I mean, but essentially, we don't need it to live and breathe. But in developing countries, you were saying, at this gathering with the World Bankers, kids get phones before they get shoes.
And actually, the significance there is that the developing countries are unbanked largely. So they don't have banks to go to. They can't get a paycheck. So the cell phone is their means for getting money. So if they get a job, they need a cell phone to take that money. And they're doing it very quickly. It's easier to throw up a cell tower than it is to run a fiber link cable, you know, through the ground for 200 miles.
There are countries like Rwanda. That I've been just incredibly impressed with. If you've watched any of Legal Report, Alex Lindsay is on there, and Alex Lindsay is constantly going back and forth to run. They have the most incredibly wired nation in the world, this tiny African republic, because they decided they could make it a priority, and they had nothing else to fight. They didn't have any telcos to fight. There was no copper to get down.
Vietnam was like the same thing. You know, all their infrastructure was gone, so they didn't have to worry about protecting the old infrastructure. They just put in new.
You know, that's why I say it seems to me that the Mobile World Congress in some ways is far more impactful. I don't know if it's more impactful than CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, because that's about consuming, and good knows we've consumed a lot.
It's more impactful this week.
You're right. This week it is. But in terms of the impact on the rest of the world, think of that with, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook wanting to make that impact on the world. Huge. Anything else struck you out of kind of the things that have been happening at Mobile World Congress?
I really was geeked up about a couple of the products there. The one was the NIMI. Oh, I'm not going to pronounce it right, but it's BioNIM NIMI. It's basically an armband.
One of the wearables. Okay.
Yeah, one of the wearables. It basically stores all of your passwords, and what they're wanting to do is you come in proximity with your mobile phone, your mobile device, and then you are unlocked.
Wow.
You come in proximity of your car via RFID or NFC, you're unlocked. So I thought that from a security perspective, that was incredibly interesting.
Very interesting options. Cal?
$79.
Now, then the question is, if I get your armband, can I unlock everything, or does it have anything tied internal to you?
So they're using echocardiogram readings from this band.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's like a heart fingerprint.
So nobody has to like cut off your arm to take off the band or anything like that.
No,
won't do them any good.
Right, exactly. You see the shows where they cut off the thumb and then they use it for the thumbprint. That wouldn't work this time because your heart has to actually be beating in a certain pattern in order for you to be recognized.
You mean it takes a lot more to
a lot more?
Yeah.
And if somebody were to capture you, you know, and accost you and say, hey, you know, here, give me this.
Your heartbeat's going to be faster.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to go up. I get it.
There you go.
You better not drink too much coffee, though, that morning. You can't get on your computer.
I'm wondering what the boundaries are there. There's a threshold.
Okay, now I'm done. I mean, I'm going to buy that one big television I've always wanted. I'm very excited about it. And I can't pay for it because the thing's beating too hard.
You're excited.
Wow. Oh, the possibilities are limitless here. Wearable devices, touched on it, Jeff, were a big part of this. Do you think that any of the other, now there are a lot of watches that came out, any of them caught your eye thinking maybe this is it? Or are we all still waiting for Apple?
The Samsung watches were really, I think they're called the Gears.
Yeah, right.
Very cool and interesting. Now I'm totally...
The Fit?
The Fit, yes.
Yes, the other one.
Very cool watch because it's combining, it's a new different kind of display. You've seen those smart watches, and they're just these giant things
the Pebble or something.
A guy like me isn't going to wear that, right? You know,
it's like a clown watch.
Exactly. But the new Fit has a really sleek display, and it looks kind of cool and hip and,
And colorful as well.
But it won't work for the young folks, right? Because My son, he'll say, Dad, why are you still wearing your watch? Well, I took it off because, you know, I can't wear a watch today.
We'll have to ask our next guest coming in if he has a watch. He would represent that young group.
Exactly, right.
I want to step into something quickly here because there's a whole bunch of things that came out from the Congress. And Cal, I was teasing a little bit because everybody is saying, you know, we're still waiting for the Apple Watch to come out. Do you think that this is still on the horizon for Apple?
Yeah.
Thank you for that penetrating comment.
You know, I'd like to give you a lot more, but I'd like to give you a lot more, but I wanted to try and do it in the way that Gary would do it. But, you know, but no, seriously, I think there's something coming. Yeah. Is it going to be just a watch? I don't know. Yeah. But I'm sure it's probably going to be like everyone else. It'll be tethered somewhat to a phone. From that particular point, you know, and this is my pure speculation. Believe me, no one in Cupertino has called me and talked
about
it.
Hey, I thought you were on a non-disclosure.
Yeah, I just disclosed that I have nothing to disclose. But, yeah, I think it's coming. I mean, everyone, it's because Apple, when they do take an idea, even though they may not be the first one to innovate it, but when they get it, they make it right, or at least
that's always been
great
design.
Yeah, right.
And they usually aren't the first one out of the gate. But when they come out,
they come out.
They benefit from
and they try to make it right the first time. So you know, it's going to take some time to do it. I mean, obviously, the first iteration of the Samsung Watch, the biggest problem is battery life. Yeah, Apple said, right. Hey, we're not going to go with this, you know, 12 hours and you're plugging it in. We're going to do something better. So, you know, those sort of things take time, especially when you're trying to put everything in such a nice confined space and make it look good.
Exactly. Do it tastefully. Jeff, as somebody who is into security in particular, one of the things that struck me is we have more and more things now with these watches and with everything else that is gathering data on us and essentially is out there with that data. What are your concerns in terms of security with all of this? And you mentioned, for instance, this one device that is a big step towards security, wearing it. But in general, what are your thoughts?
My biggest concerns are around the fact that these companies are doing a great job, a really great job of bringing functionality to the market as soon as hardware is ready, right? So this stuff is really leading edge. This is really cool stuff. And they're doing a great job of bringing it to us. So I can have my heart rate monitored all day. My sleep patterns can be monitored. I can do all this kind of cool stuff. But the model that we have for developing that stuff is first to market, right? First to market gets the gold, you know? Right. And so therefore, security has not been the priority. Now, my big concern, security and privacy, I would separate those two. I'd say privacy is my big concern because if I know if I've got a heart rate pattern for you and that gets Bluetooth to your computer, which then is connected to the internet, which then has a virus, I can collect everything about you. Well, I mean, down to your heart rate, the pattern.
But how does, why do they need that? Because you would think that if they could get just the financial information, that's the easiest way to revenue.
So right? the answer to that is 20 bucks on the black market gets me identity. 60 bucks gets, if I can get anything personal related to your health, related to your being, right? So 60 bucks is when I can get your personal data, but also get your heart conditions, any
prescriptions.
If I'm a hacker, how do I monetize that? What's it worth to me? How do I get? So I mean, I could guess a couple things, but what's your opinion?
Let me speculate if I could.
Okay.
Can I jump in?
Just kind of quick,
okay.
Yeah.
So now what they'll do is rather than steal your identity, they'll start taking and tying your security into your biometric signature. And so therefore, you know, just like you said, if you take the watch off, it won't work for somebody else. But then now if I can steal your biometric signature, I can just go buy a watch and just emulate the biometric signature and I can steal whatever I want from you.
Yeah, that's actually really, really astute because if you look at the Target thing from before Christmas, the way they got in was a supplier. They compromised the credentials of a supplier, this heating and cooling company that should never have had maintained access
yes,
over
exactly.
time to the Target network.
Oh.
Well, if I can easily get that data from you, then I can break into Target. Right?
Yep. And that is the door. Listen, we're going to talk some more about the security as we go on, but in just a moment, I'll come back because we have somebody in here to talk about civic hacking, which I think you're going to be fascinated by, so stay tuned. You know, it's kind of interesting, guys. We've been talking about the notion of hacking, of getting people's data, and then doing things with that, and the concerns about that with cybersecurity. Well, there's something out there called civic hacking, and I got to confess to something. I have become addicted to TED Talks. I am utterly addicted, and I just consumed a whole bunch this week, and one of them that
Actually, there's worse things.
Yes, there certainly are worse things than that, folks. I would invite you all to do that as well. But I ran into a talk by a lady named Catherine Bracey, who was speaking about civic hacking. And to make a long story short, I want to bring in somebody who is involved in that Code Brigade for America, who is with us in our studio right here, who is with that part in Detroit. And let me kind of clumsily do that, but let me bring Matt Hample in. Matt, welcome again to our program here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Matt, let's talk a little bit about what the Brigade, give me the right words.
So we are the Code for America Detroit Brigade.
There you go. Yeah. Detroit Brigade. It's Code for America Detroit Brigade. What is Code for America?
Code for America is a national nonprofit, and we're working to change the way governments and cities think about technology. We're trying to bring everyone into the 21st century together.
And I understand from the examples I heard from Catherine's talk, she gave the examples of Honolulu and Mexico City, and there was one other that I forget, where the example of Mexico City was that, get this, guys, the legislature there was going to spend $9 million plus to develop a small app to help some of the legislatures follow laws as they went through the Mexican Congress.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable. $9 billion for that.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. And people were outraged, and some coders in Mexico City then got together and said, oh, no, you don't. And they put their wits together and came up with more than 100, am I right? More than 100 applications?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we've seen this all over, where there's tons of really talented technical people in the community who are sitting around selling people ads, and they want to do more. They want to give back to the community, and that's what this is all about. It's saying, hey, we have this talent there. Let's bring it together. Let's get ourselves organized, and let's contribute back to the places we live in.
So how is that being applied here in Detroit with you and your compatriots?
Yeah, so we formed the Code for America Detroit Brigade, which you can find out more about at codefordetroit.com, and we get together every week with a bunch of really great technologists to talk about how we can help solve some challenges in the Detroit area and to actually do that work. And when I say challenges, I'm not just talking about, hey, we have a beautiful idea, let's try and do it. We're actually talking actively with people at the city, with people in the community and community groups working on projects that are meaningful here.
Can you give me some examples of things that you're doing here in Detroit?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of years ago, we worked with the Detroit Department of Transportation, DDOT, and they have some fantastic bus tracking data. They're actually tracking every bus live, and we help them put that out there so everybody can access that real-time information so you know when the bus is going to come.
Wow, that is impressive.
So is your effort strictly for the public good, or is it a profit effort, or is it a combination? What's going on?
This is a nonprofit effort, a national nonprofit at Code for America, and so our effort is for the public good.
And so how do you guys fund yourself, you know, to be able to keep this organization running?
We have some very generous sponsors, including the Knight Foundation, and we are a very tight ship. You know, it's an local organization here. We just get together every week at a donated space downtown and get together, have a couple drinks maybe, have some food, and get some work done.
So it just doesn't cost that much.
Wow. There you go.
So if somebody wanted to get involved, what would they do?
Well, take a look, search Google Code for Detroit, or visit codefordetroit.com and sign up for our meetup page. We're going to be having a meeting this coming Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., and most Thursdays, 6 to 8 p.m. in downtown Detroit, Michigan.
And you also have a Facebook page, am I right?
That's exactly right. If search Code for Detroit.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is just intrinsic motivation, right? It's because your members, they just want to give back. They do want to do something, and they're very talented. They're very equipped to do this kind of work. Why not, right?
That's absolutely true. And it's, you know, Code for Detroit is a little bit of a misnomer because it's not just coders. There absolutely are some fantastic developers are in there. We have people who have backgrounds in marketing coming in, advertising. We have people who are data scientists. We have social scientists, community members, all sorts of folks we want to come in and be a part of this.
Matt, what are you focusing on right now then with all these different talents? You mentioned the DDOT program. Was it like an app that's out there that people can download?
So there's an app that's out there for the iPhone and Android. There's a text-in program. So if you're out in Detroit waiting for the bus, you can text right in and get the information. There's a raw data API. So if you're a programmer, you can tap right into that, build your own app, and sell it for whatever you want or give it away for free.
Oh, wow. So this would be available to anybody in Detroit to be able to get to that DDOT thing.
It's all out there and ready to go.
So what are some of the things that you folks are focusing on now that you could tell us without having to kill us?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you have heard about the Detroit Future City Framework. This is a large plan that was put together over the course of years to help think about what future directions for the built environment in Detroit would look like. So how do we deal with this vacant land? How do we deal with improving our assets, with building up what we have and make the city a really wonderful, vibrant place? And right now it's online. They just relaunched a new website, but it's still difficult to get at the information of the plan. And this is like a 350-page colored, double-sided printout that often have to find.
Okay, and part of what you folks then do is to mine that information out, right? Am I right?
Yeah, and the Detroit Future City team is fantastic, so we've been talking to them about how can we help them get that information out in a more web-native way.
Ah, and I think, guys, this is where I think the notion of civic hacking comes in, and the hacking is simply people with the skills to be able to take a look at a problem like that and say, why can't we do X? And Jeff, maybe you can chime in on this. You deal with the young folks this age, I imagine, all the time as you're a teacher there.
And exactly. It's not a pejorative term. It's it's people doing a lot of cool stuff with very little. And so that's the concept. My students can come up with so many different things of ways of thinking about things that I cannot even come up with. They're out-of-the-box thinkers.
You know what I found interesting, guys, was that the whole notion when Catherine Braze was talking about this was that you had this monstrous bureaucracy kind of trying to get its, like an octopus, arms around problems, like Detroit with our economic disaster here, and not being able to do it, where you have this very nimble group of very talented people who are saying, well, why don't we just do this? And they jump in and get something like the bus app going, and this Detroit Future thing kind of going.
That's exactly right. So we see these small projects as being really the beginning of huge things. So you talked about this Mexico City project, $9 million, or the Affordable Care Act, the healthcare.gov,
yeah.
All those projects, huge multi-million dollar expenditures that end up doing poorly. And we think a better approach to it is let's start small. Let's do some experiments. Let's build some little projects, build together, see what works, see what doesn't work, and then build those up in an agile way over time.
That's really fantastic. We're talking, by the way, with Matt Hample, who is with the Code for Detroit Brigade here in Detroit. And by the way, codefordetroit.com, if you want to find that out. We'll put that on our homepage as well so people can go to that. One of the things that I find, here we are in the midst of a bankruptcy here right now. As you, your young minds with, you know, haven't been told you can't do this yet, what are the kind of things you see we could tackle on very small, bite-sized kind of practical ways?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the things include, we're going to be having a day on education coming up. Huge, intractable problem, the worldwide, hard to solve. But what can we do with the information we have here in Detroit? There's groups like Excellent Schools Detroit who are putting out really fantastic information about the schools here. They're going to be coming and talking to all of us and seeing what our ideas are, and we're going to be talking about their challenges. And I think it really comes to asking the people who are doing the work what their challenges are and getting really concrete information about them, where we can help, instead of just taking a stab in the dark.
I love that. You know, it's kind of like people coming to Ed and Cal and Gary, people, or Jeff as well, people who have a background in technology and saying, okay, here's my problem. Apply your skills to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And apply your imagination to it. That's what I find really exciting. And Jeff, I bet you see that too in dealing with these young minds in your classrooms.
Absolutely. The thing that we as we get older, struggle with is we have a certain way of doing things.
Yeah.
We think about things in a certain way. With the advent of mobile technology and all of the infrastructure that's available to us, things like that app for transportation are wonderful. We would never think of doing it that way.
Right.
But we have access to information that's really available, and we can process it on these little tiny devices in such a way that we can get it to everybody, whereas if I tried to print something out and put it in a newspaper, that would take a long time.
Well, and Matt, that's one of the problems that has kind of inhibited groups like yours from doing something like this in the past, which was you needed access to information. Sometimes
Right. The
governmental authorities, the cities, were not willing to let you use their or give you access to their bus. In this case, the buses, right?
That's totally right. And the truth is there's some fantastic people. Everyone we work with in the city of Detroit has been amazing to work with. And Detroit has a new chief information officer, Beth Niblock, and she mm-hmm. came by our meeting last week. And I know one of the priorities of the new administration is getting an open data portal out there.
Right.
So making sure that there's a one-stop shop for this information that people are requesting in the community frequently.
So, you know, one of the reasons sometimes they don't is they don't want to expose just how badly kept that information is.
Yes.
Right? I'm not saying one way or the other that I think that's the case in Detroit, but, you know, is there a way that maybe you could help even with some of that?
That's true. And this is not a gotcha game. This is not about seeing where the faults are. We're not saying put data out there because then we can nitpick it. It's saying here's how we can help with this. Because to be honest, no data is perfect. Even your most expensive advertising data set that a multinational is paying millions of dollars to access to, it probably has some horrible information in it.
That's right.
We're saying if you open this up, we can help you in the process of making it better.
Right. Putting some really bright young minds to it. Matt, stick around. We're going to talk with you a little bit after we talk with Mike Brennan coming up and talk a little bit more about, I think, one of the most exciting things around here, putting these young minds and skills to work, focusing on very practical problems in our area. And we'll be back in just a moment to talk with Mr. Mike Brennan with his MITechNews.com. By the way, if you want to find ways of subscribing to that and more information about this program, just visit InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and it's time for us to talk with Mike Brennan from MI Tech News and talk about some of the headlines there. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster.
Good to have you aboard. And by the way, this program is brought to you by the folks at ITA and New Horizons Computer Learning Centers. They are offering, by the way, some very deep discounts for classes at New Horizons, where they open up New Horizons for people in computing. We'll have that information and that link up on our homepage as well. And also thank you for support from ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, Warner Norcross and Judd Attorneys at Law, also behind us here. How well protected and capitalized is your intellectual property? Well, Mike, let's see the headlines I'm looking at here. One that caught my eye right away was that MI Quest is on a quest to make Michigan a top five entrepreneurial state again.
Yeah, that's the merger of the Small Business Association of Michigan Foundation, which is famous for its entrepreneur scorecard, and the Great Lakes Entrepreneurs Quest, which has been around since, I believe, the year 2000, which does the business plan competition statewide, which has helped thousands of entrepreneurs at this point. They got together about a year ago. I guess it's been in the works for a while, and now they're merged together, and they've renamed the combined organization MyQuest. I like that. My Tech News, MyQuest. But we'll go with that. I won't ask for any copyright violation or anything, you know.
No, we want to support that. Definitely want to support that.
Yeah.
One of the other things I saw in here, it's kind of an interesting news note and political note, too, is that the governor, Governor Snyder now, looks like he's seeing more rationale for the state to move on this Main Street fairness, which, am I understanding right, that's the internet tax?
Yeah, he wanted the feds to move first because he thinks it's really a federal issue because he wants all the states to be the same. If we're doing federal law, that supersedes state law. But he's now changed his mind and said, well, heck, let's go ahead and move on this because we're talking a whole lot of money.
Yep.
We're talking hundreds of millions, perhaps $1 billion.
Right.
Because, I mean, more and more sales are being done over the Internet, and that's just going to continue to grow.
And at a very unfair advantage, some would say, to the Internet, for instance, Amazon. You can go to Amazon, and generally speaking, you can get things for much less, much quicker, and you don't pay any sales tax on that. Or you should. Am I right, Gary? You should be paying sales tax on that.
Only where they have Nexus, where they have a location.
Okay, right. Where they have a Nexus. All right. But anyway.
And I know Gary reports on his IRS forms every time he buys something online. Line, or not Michigan forms, but you're paying your Michigan tax every time you buy online, right, Gary?
I do, and the reason I do that, and it cost me $60 last year, because I bought about $1,000 online of stuff, and that I didn't pay tax. Sometimes you do pay tax,
yep.
And you don't have to count those, because you
right.
already paid the tax. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have to pay a 6% use tax. I could just imagine somebody saying, oh, we can get this guy that's on the radio. And
yeah.
So I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, a little more vulnerable there.
I don't want to be that guy.
No, not at all. By the way.
I would honestly come and see Gary in jail.
Thank you.
Bring him a cake with a file.
I really
right?
appreciate
you
that.
Bring a cake with a file. Isn't that nice to know Cal would visit you? Hey, Mike, one of the other things before we take a break here is that Pure Michigan has won a very nice little award.
Yeah, they keep racking them up. They really have a killer website. And that whole program, George Zimmerman has done a wonderful job with
that.
He has. It consistently ranks among the top two or three every year nationwide. And I hear a lot of people, I mean, the only thing they know about Michigan is they see the Pure Michigan ads.
Right.
And so they're just acknowledging that by their peers, saying they're doing a heck of a job, which, you know, anybody has been following this can attest to. So hats off to George and the folks at Pure Michigan.
Yep, we received 8 Adrian Awards. Well, so hats off to you, Mike, as well, for putting together this MI Tech News. Folks, it comes together every week on Friday. Mike has been a reporter out there looking at business and entrepreneurial efforts throughout the state of Michigan for many, many years. He's got great contacts behind the scenes, and that's what leads him to the stories that he puts together for you at mitechnews.com. The best part about it is it's absolutely free. All you need to do is to go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Go down the page to the little button that says subscribe here below his smiling face. Click on that, and every Friday you're going to receive a full range of headlines that go everything from these national headlines all the way down to and including entrepreneurial events that are coming up locally. So make
sure. I might add, we also have the podcast
links
for your show there every week.
Absolutely.
So if you can't hear it live, you can listen to the podcast.
Excellent. Yeah, there are lots of links to our show as well. Thank you very much, Mike.
And My Tech News, I might say that because Mike does know a lot of people, you get a different view of the news and sometimes very different news because he can get the story behind the story. And that's what's fun about My Tech News and reading that.
Absolutely.
So, the check's in the mail.
It won't be your checkbook.
Not needed. It's a great... My Tech News is great. I've been reading it a long time now.
And it's absolutely free to you, folks. Just... Get on our website, internetadvisor.net, and subscribe. Mike, maybe one more headline before we wrap up here. Michigan Strategic Fund is providing $7.6 million in grants to improve downtowns. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, mostly the smaller downtowns, littler cities like Durand and Ithaca and Lapeer and places like that. But they don't have the money in their budget to do the kinds of things. I mean, it's the whole, you know, cool city thing that Granholm started that's kind of carried over to our governor. But it's really true. Younger people want to live in vibrant downtowns. Just look at Detroit. That's the reason Detroit is coming back strong isn't because, you know, we baby boomers are moving there. It's my kids are moving there, or your kids are moving there. You know, so
and grandchildren
they like to
in some cases.
Cool things,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. So. Well, Mike, thanks so much again for a great job you do with MITechNews.com. And folks, again, don't forget it's yours, absolutely free every Friday. A whole list of these headlines and many more. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Hey, before we wrap up this first hour, I want to have Jeff come back and also Matt. Jeff, you have somebody very important in the studio here that I want to make sure that he gets up and says hello to us. Introduce this young man to us, please.
This is Jesse. He's my he's my 8-year-old son, and he just wants to say hi. And he uses the internet every day for various things. What do you use it for, Jesse?
Mostly like educational stuff, but sometimes I go on it for games.
I understand, Jesse. You're homeschooled, right?
Yeah.
Do you do any of your homeschooling online?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds cool. So you not only get to have your, you know, games. And I imagine you play games on there as well, do you? Do you play games, too?
Yeah.
Like, Minecraft? You play Minecraft?
I have the light version of my iPad.
Okay. I have a grandson about your age who plays Minecraft as well, and he really gets into that. What are some other things you like to do on the internet?
I do not know.
Okay, there's lots of things there. It's hard to pick one out. But matter of fact, you've been sitting very quietly in the back there with your. Tell them what you're using so they know the technology.
Yeah, my iPad Mini.
Oh, you're rocking an iPad Mini. That's really good. That is really good. Jeff, thank you very much for introducing this young man to us, Jesse. And Jeff, thank you very much for being with us. Professor Jeff Inglesby, who is with the University of Detroit Mercy. We studies cybersecurity there. Matt, I want to bring you back in, Matt Hample as well. And thank you for being with us here from the Code for Detroit. You are also involved, and this is so exciting to me, in so many other things. There's a wiki for Detroit. Tell people what a wiki is.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. And the Detroit Wiki is a place to put information about Detroit that might not otherwise find its way online. And we all know and love Wikipedia, and this is very much in the same mold, but Wikipedia's gotten to the point where they're very stringent about what's on there.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say, this local personality, you know, this local radio host, maybe they think he's not notable enough. Let's find, you have to have so many sources, all this sort of things. These are things that matter to us here. We want to put them online. We want to have a place to say them. Here's a really cool example of how it's being used. The Detroit Sound Conservancy, which is a new nonprofit that's starting up in Detroit, is sharing the history of music in Detroit using the site, including making maps really easily, uploading pictures, writing up the history, having lots of contributors. It's really easy to use. DetroitWiki.org.
Oh, okay, so it's DetroitWiki.org.
That's the address.
I love it. And that wiki is W-I-K-I. And folks, you'll find the kind of energy that you're hearing from Matt and his cohorts. We hope to have you back, by the way, to talk more about this. I'm excited to hear about those projects that you folks are working on to take your skills and apply them to some of the issues that are going on in Detroit. Really quick, it got like 30 seconds. Any big thing going on right now we should look for?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing all your listeners at our meetups on Thursday afternoons in downtown Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, where are they going to be in Detroit?
They're going to be in Grand Circus, and if you search Code for Detroit, you'll find out all the details.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much.
The Broderick Tower, right?
That's correct.
That's right.
Beautiful space.
Thank you for being with us. Hey, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, the second part is where we say the rubber meets the road. That's where we put our skills to work to solve your problems.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor. I'll try that again. It's the Internet Advisor. That's what it is. And it's the second hour. My name is Foster Brown. I'm co-host of the program. It's good to know that it doesn't all depend on me. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson are also in studio with us. This second hour is the one where we put ourselves to answering questions that you've sent us through email. And we're going to dig into some coming up here in a practical way in just a moment. So hang on. More of the Internet Advisor. It's the second hour of the Internet Advisor, and already the fun has begun behind the scenes here. We have got Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio. And I've got to say that Ed, your chest is a little swollen out here because of the images that you showed me on the way in. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you've accomplished?
Let's see, which one was that? Was that the changing the oil?
The laptop.
Oh, okay. No, my son, we talked about last week. I went online to Amazon, got him a Lenovo, sent it to him. He transferred all his data. And when I saw him last week, he brought his old original laptop, which is only 6 months old, and it had broken hinges. The metal hinges that were attached to the VAIO LCD panel had basically broken loose from the cheap, and I'll say this to Sony out there, cheap plastic inserts that they did. They used to, in previous generations, had aluminum or brass fittings that they've cheapened them up and they use plastic. So what I did is I made these fittings that basically, so the screws actually go through the lid and come out the backside, but I made a decorative plastic with brass little knurls, I think is the what you term.
Okay, we've got to post this on our Facebook site.
It came out very nice. I mean, it's almost, what was the term you used?
Steampunk.
Yeah, and that's because he's not done with it yet, because he's going to dress it up a little bit prettier than that.
Well, tell people what steampunk is, Kel, because that's kind of fun.
Well, it's a culture that's going on now where basically you take and you mix today's technology and technology like from the 1800s together to make things.
Right. A lot of brass and steam
and
fixtures and copper.
Mechanical things,
gears. And so you can actually really take a laptop. It'll probably add a hell of a lot of weight to it.
But it's like the Industrial Revolution meets today's technology.
Exactly. Yeah. So you take a lot of...
Think of the Sherlock Holmes movies
that recently came out. Or Rube Goldberg, and reminds me of it, where they had all the bells and the whistles and things that spun around. Really cool stuff. for tinkerers in particular. Well, this week we've had some interesting emails that have come in. One that, Ed, I want to kind of take a swipe at early on here, and maybe we can talk about it a little bit more as we go on. We have some folks we're going to be calling who have sent us some email. But one of them was Bob, who said his wife had purchased a laptop for him from Gateway. And matter of fact, we've got Bob, who is sitting online with us right now, and we're going to talk with him about his situation. Bob, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. How are you, Foster?
Doing very well. Now, your cry for help came to our ears, and I know Ed had responded to this a little bit, but I want to talk with you a little bit more about this whole business of Windows 8 on your Gateway. You got the brand new laptop with Windows 8 on it, right?
Yes, sir.
And you were not happy with Windows 8?
I'm still not happy with Windows 8.
Now, do you have a touchscreen?
No, it doesn't have a touchscreen.
Okay.
I've completely neglected to ask about that, because one of the things that happens is you completely lose the experience
I would not be happy without a touchscreen.
Yeah. Everyone that I know, and the lady I carpool with, Christine, purchased one, and she goes, I don't need touchscreen. And now she just dreads it. And
I love it, but I have a touchscreen.
Right. It makes it more bearable.
You know, when you
more bearable. I think that, the kids love it, but they all use touchscreens, right?
Yeah. But, you know, if you go to Windows 8.1, you can get back to a desktop experience.
That's right.
Yes. And it's much more comfortable.
Well, right. No, hang on. I will. But this is where
you can't even buy an 8. It's all 8.1.
Yeah, it's not all 8.1. The point, Bob, what I wanted to get back to, and what Ed is touching on, is for the rest of our listeners as well, and this is why I wanted to talk to you, the experience, and I've been using a Surface 2. Which is the Microsoft device that is has a detachable keyboard, et cetera. And I love it. I use it as a touch device all the time, and that really is the key to using that Metro interface. Am I right in thinking, Bob, that the thing that annoyed you most, that you found most difficult to deal with, were the colored tiles?
Not only the colored tiles, I'm still really, really having a lot of difficulty navigating.
Okay, when you say navigating, tell me what you mean, to get a little deeper into that.
A little deeper. Classic thing today, went on my email. I don't even know how to find spell check on my email. I Windows Live email, I click down, I can't find the controls.
For spell check?
That was a classic example, yeah.
Well, okay,
for spell check today.
So he's using the native mail application that was in... That's provided by Windows.
Well, I use that too, for instance, on the Surface. And Gary, I don't know if you know, you found this, but I found that spell check works marvelously.
Yeah, who needs to find it?
Yeah, Bob, why do you need to find it? Tell me what you mean by find it.
This is kind of silly, but occasionally I might be writing something and I use my Windows Live Mail for spell check. If I want to see if I spell a word wrong, I open a new mail and Live Mail. I type the word the way I want to spell it, and if it's spelled wrong, it underlines it. I hit spell check, and it tells me how to spell the word correctly.
Oh, well, I mean, in terms of the mail that I'm using right now, and I use the mail application on the Surface Pro, on the Surface that I'm using, the Surface 2. And Gary,
I use Outlook.
You use Outlook. Yeah. See, Gary uses Outlook.
And I don't need spell check because it just does it for me.
Well, I have to say, by the way, that the mail on Surface does the same thing.
It does it for you.
It does it for me.
Yeah, but there are times when you want something to spell check, and maybe it's spell checking for you the word, I don't know, wait. And maybe you want WAIT, and then you're doing WEIGHT. Sometimes spell check comes in handy for that.
Well,
but it should underline it automatically.
You know how to invoke it the way he used to invoke it.
Exactly.
What we're dealing with is
we're suggesting, Bob, that invoking it, as Eddie is saying, may not be necessary. Tell you what, can you hang on a second?
Absolutely.
Good. Okay, we're going to put you on hold for just a minute. I want to explore this a little bit more with our guest Bob, talking about Windows and the problems he's encountering, because I think a lot of people out there are finding that as well. We are tackling a subject here today with our internet advisor and our guest Bob, who called in. He had sent an email to us explaining his problem of having gotten a new laptop with Windows 8 on it, and he just doesn't like it. He wanted to switch back to Windows 7, and we're going to talk specifically, Bob, about getting you back there and how to do that kind of thing. But one of the things that you were talking about was, for instance, that one of the sore points for you was that you couldn't get spell check automatically in mail. Am I right? Or you couldn't invoke it?
That was just an example of my navigation difficulty.
Okay, the navigation, getting around it was difficult for you, right?
Yes, sir.
What made it so difficult?
To me, it's like nothing I've ever operated.
Right, so it's completely changed. It's a completely different paradigm shift. It's something he wasn't expecting.
Right.
And he has to relearn everything all over again.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest complaints, and why, although it seems to be selling well because Microsoft isn't giving people many choices if they want to choose a Microsoft product, this is their only option.
Right.
You know, a lot of people are grumbling about it.
Right.
So what they've come up with is Microsoft has bent a little bit and is allowing people to boot their computers up to the standard Windows desktop. But there are two other products that have more than two. One's called Classic Start, and the other one's called the Skip Metro Suite. And what these do, they're applications that you would download, and they allow you to boot to the what looks like a traditional Windows desktop.
Mm-hmm.
The Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows XP, the ones that have the start button or a start, you know, that actually
says
start.
The way it used to look.
The way it used to look, mm-hmm. so that you can get to your control panel, your devices, your programs, without going through the tiles. And that you can have your same screensavers that you had before. A lot of people are resistant to change. You know, this was, as Cal said during the commercial break, they were forced. It wasn't a gradual type of change.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, just for the fun of it, there are places on the net that you can go to that have what they call the Windows 8 primers. It tells you how to operate or how to navigate that new operating system. For example, TheVerge.com has a nice primer out there that you might want to take a look at to get a better feel for what that operating system may be like. Now, whether we both like it or not, eventually it's going to be that. And I understand that you have some reluctance going into the breach, but eventually you're going to be going there anyway because they're going to take that away. It's going to go away eventually.
Here's a question I have for you folks in general, and tell me if I'm true in saying this to Bob. You don't want to go backwards to Windows 7.
No.
Because it actually isn't as good as Windows 8 under the hood.
It is basically Windows 7 under the hood, but it's been hugely optimized. Am I right, Gary?
That's right. And securitized in a different way.
Right. But it is basically Windows 7 with a different interface, but they've optimized it. It is so darn fast booting up, and it's just not because of the processing speed. If you were to throw Windows 8 on a computer that used to run Windows 7 right out of the box, take two, much faster. I mean, you're talking, you could boot it up in 15 seconds as opposed to 45 seconds.
So what they did was they created this interface that does, you know, operate faster. But because they threw people into the breach, you know, it was as if you looked at, and they looked at it as a tablet computer combination,
right,
to get us to move into a unified,
it's like one interface to serve
to
them all,
unified platform, mm-hmm. instead of trying to go to a tablet interface and a. If this were only a tablet interface, people would go, "Hey, this is great."
Exactly, no, Bob. You wouldn't be fighting it, Bob, because, for instance, you wouldn't even see it.
Right. You wouldn't have anything that you used to use on a tablet.
Yeah, Ed.
Hey, Bob, now I wanted to ask you. We've been talking over you, but I wanted to ask you: did you get my email that I sent you and view the two videos about the Classic Start or the Skip Metro Suite?
Actually, I got your email, and I've been trying for the past 2 days to get Windows 8.1 to load.
Oh, my goodness. A bigger problem.
I can't get it.
Okay, now, did these applications require that you have Windows 8.1 in order for them to work?
Well, I misunderstood. I thought the first step was to get Windows 8.1, and then that would allow me to use the new application.
I think both of these, Windows 8.1 update allowed, is a Microsoft way to boot up to the old desktop. These two other apps have been around since before Microsoft released the update. You can skip that part if you're having difficulty. The 8.1 update is available through the Microsoft Store. But if you're having difficulty, there might be some other problem going on.
Yeah, there must be, because, I mean, I've been on the store a number of times. I've had,
Can you do a simple...
I've had error reports and such things, so I haven't been able to get 8.1.
Bob, I'm wondering if you simply, because you got a brand new computer with 8 on it...
It may already be on there.
You simply can't go back to it.
Right, it may already be on there, exactly.
What is the function of Windows 8, Eddie, that you can go put it back to factory condition? There, if you go into... Oh, shoot. Help me, guys. Okay, go ahead. Talk among yourselves, and I'll see if I can find it.
Okay. So what we're suggesting right now is this... view the two videos. Have you viewed those at least?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, yeah, try that and see if that helps you, at least with the Windows interface. But also understand a lot of mechanical things will change in the background, and I'm talking about your day-to-day use of it. One of the examples you gave is that you used to use spell check in one way. That functionality may still be there, but it's really dependent on what applications you have installed. Do you have Microsoft Office Suite installed on your computer?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, and even that's probably completely different because it has a ribbon now, I believe.
Well, it's completely different because I loaded 2013 and I've used 2007 and 2003, so yet another new curveball.
Yeah, and you will end up liking it better, but it's going to take a little while. I think it took all of us a little while to get used to it. But there is hope. There's a little bit of a light there. When you finally get used to it, I think it'll operate a little better.
Actually, it took me no time at all because I use a Mac.
You smart aleck. Yeah, was that helpful? Yeah. Now, listen, I think that... Are we being, in some ways, kind of facetious, saying, hey, don't worry about it, you'll get used to it. And he, Bob, and a lot of other consumers are saying, heck no.
I don't want to get used to it.
I don't want to get used to it. I want to go back to the way it worked for me before.
Well, I think, actually, if he can get 8.1, if it's not loaded, and it might be, we need to check that, Bob, to make sure that it isn't.
I double-checked my system.
You did? Okay.
I was just messing with it today. It's still... Definitely Windows 8.0.
Yeah, so we could get you upgraded to 8.1, and we got to figure out that, I think you can boot to the old system, and then, you know, gradually over time, you can start to use the Metro system and decide, you know, how much more you can do or want to do with it. Eventually, like Cal said, eventually you'll go to the next one after this, And
Windows 9.
Yeah, but even with this Microsoft Windows 8.0 update, it really doesn't give you a Microsoft Start button. That's where you need the two other programs that we were talking about. What they do is they enable the ability for you to recreate a Windows Start button.
So
if
you won't have to see the Metro face at all.
At all.
Can't he go away from the Metro face immediately by just holding down the Windows key and hitting the D for desktop and it'll take him right there?
Yes, but you don't have a Start button.
I am going straight to desktop right now.
But what he's saying is when he boots, he will not get the Start menu,
There's no program files. There's no, you know.
Exactly. So it doesn't look the same. Here's what I'm going to suggest as well. You can go to, you want to go down to the right-hand side, bring the charms in, and then go down to change your PC settings, which is at the bottom right. And then from there, you go to update. And on update, an update and recovery, the bottom one recovery, gives you the option to remove everything and reinstall Windows.
Yeah, but if he does that, cautionary note, you're going to lose all the data and everything you've done on it.
So, is that okay, Bob?
At this point, I have only a couple minor things, which I've already emailed to myself. So
right, that's what I thought, that you're at a place right now, Ed, what do you think, guys, where he could just simply scrub the machine, go back to ground zero, and then try the 8.1 update at that point. Or all the other updates.
Why not? If he's only had it for a few days or a week.
Matter of fact, if I remember right, because I just worked on a machine the other day, I scrubbed it, and then when I brought it back up to start doing the updates, it offered 8.1 right off the bat.
There you go. So now, Bob, we've gotten a bunch of things we've run out for you today. Ed also had some things in your email that we'll kind of touch on in just a minute when we come back. But thank you very much for calling. I wanted you to kind of be the voice of the disgruntled customer for Windows 8. And I think you've done a good job of that, Bob. We're going to stick with you, though, to help you out. Thank you so much for being with us today here on the Internet Advisor. I don't imagine that we have put a bow on the problem of people dealing with Windows 8 or 8.1, if you will, the update to Windows 8 with our last caller. But Ed has put together you put a wonderful response to Bob the other day that you sent out in the email that would be for all of you who want to avoid opening up Windows 8 and going to the Metro, which is our
I almost feel like interface. A traitor doing that.
Well,
it's you know, but it's giving people a choice, I guess.
People who use mouse and keyboard.
Yes. I made the mistake of not buying a touch interface.
Exactly. And, you know, Ginny has gotten used to using the mouse with the Metro interface. And I just asked her the other day, you want me to put this classic shell on? She said, why? You know, she's gotten used to it now. But for those who haven't, and for whom it's a big problem not seeing what they used to see, Ed, you put a package together, and we're going to post a link to it on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. But just describe kind of quickly what you put in there.
Well, basically, it was talking about the Windows 8.1 update. And how Microsoft provided the ability to you to boot to the desktop, but also a couple utilities that have sprung up on the network and that allow you to boot into the Metro interface and then basically reconstruct a start environment, a start button environment like you used to do. And Foster, you were telling me this, and how to customize your Internet Explorer so it looks like the Internet Explorer you're used to.
Absolutely.
Instead of abandoning Internet Explorer and going to Chrome or Firefox or something like that, that in the traditional Windows 8 environment that you can have the status
you can
bar
put
back.
You can put your favorites back up there. You can have the progress bar. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you used to. You can get back with Classic Shell, for instance.
Yeah, Classic Shell or the Skip Metro interface. And one of them is put together by the Twit.
I didn't know. Leo's.
Yeah, Leo Laporte's Twit.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So, and I chose that one for you, Foster. I know you listen to Twit all the time.
I do, all the time. But the point is, folks, that you can actually get something. Now, see if this analogy works, guys, that with this Classic Shell, you can get something that looks like your old car, but under the hood has got all sorts of optimization that's gone on with the engine so that you're now getting 10 more miles to the gallon, and it's got emergency braking things, and everything else is under the hood. So it looks like what you were used to, and you're comfortable with that, but under the hood, it's got some really big improvements.
And what I hope is that people will then go back to the Metro interface on occasion, because live tiles are cool.
They are.
And as they evolve and as there become more of them, you'll have more than just mail, Facebook, weather. Right. You'll have other things that may,
And you learn to use them. Cal, you were going
to
say something?
No, and not trying to be snarky or anything like that, but you know, it's
says
really...
Says the Apple man.
It's really unusual that in the Windows environment, I think a lot of the operating system come out, people always want to go back to the other one.
Well, hey, Kel, no, we heard a lot of howling when iOS 7 came out on the iPhone too.
Yeah, but you know, no one creates an interface to make you go back to it. You know, folks eventually just kind of just go along.
Oh, I thought
with
there
it.
Were some that they tried to, but anyway, but yeah,
Microsoft had to do something. I mean, we talked about this in the show before, man. Apple was hot on their heels. You got Android coming up there. You got Ubuntu, and they had to come up with something, and they did
the
it with their,
world,
with their mobile environment and tablet, right. But man, it just didn't pan out on their PCs.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how this new
is that
group
a fair assessment?
I think that's accurate in what you said. Yeah. It's a good insight and that sort of thing, but you're just rushing into something just because what our former guest said, you know, to be the first, you know.
Right.
Let's do it right rather than be
well,
the first.
Kind of an interesting footnote, and I want to go on to our next caller, Jerry, who was waiting patiently for us here. But one of the interesting footnotes I've heard is when you take a look at the organizational chart of Microsoft now, what you see is that there are a lot of people who are involved in mobile and who have been involved in cloud-based, and that Microsoft is making there's a real shift going on towards this devices and services, and that the services, as in Office in the cloud, and is in OneDrive, which is their big drive on the sky, you know, all those things, are Office 365, these are the things that are going to be taking more and more impact, and we're going to see on more and more different kind of devices, even maybe the iPad carrying Office.
It's the direction they'd like to go. Now, whether or not the world as a whole is going to accept that direction is another story.
But just within Microsoft, Satya Nadella, for instance, is somebody who ran with a new boss there, ran the cloud-based, if you will, the cloud-based.
Just think if Microsoft came up with an app through one of their subsidiaries and it's as popular as WhatsApp.
Yeah, WhatsApp,
my gosh.
Yes, yeah.
You know, talk about their stock going through the roof, right?
Yeah.
If they come up with something like that, they have OneDrive, and if they keep these initiatives up, they may get hit one of these days. And they got Nokia under their belt now.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about things that a lot of other companies do fairly regularly that I don't think Microsoft can. And that is they just have too big a market share. They have too big of an installed base. They have an older installed base. And if they try to move as fast as, say, an Apple, because there are dramatic changes in what Apple has done over the years, and it's been embraced. Here, this was a dramatic change. And it's not that they hate the fact that it doesn't do this or that. They don't like the change, right? And it's not everybody, but it is enough people.
No,
Microsoft, I think, just can't move as fast.
Over a billion,
users. And yeah, you just can't use that fast.
And the other thing is that Microsoft, if you kind of look at it for, if you want to use Apple as a comparison, Microsoft is more of an enterprise, more of a corporate type thing, and corporations don't swing and change as fast as they do with a consumer, a stronger consumer-based
product. There are very few I don't know of a single medium or large company that's moved to Windows 8. But Windows 7, they've stayed. In fact, some of them are having trouble getting off of XP.
right, exactly.
Just because they didn't start soon enough, not that they're having any trouble doing it. But, you know, because they're slow adopters of that technology. Because you have to go train people. You have to make sure that people, because they're supposed to be doing work.
And I think the finger on it is that Windows up to this point has been huge in the enterprise, period, in businesses. And there are billions of people using it, so it's going to move slowly.
It is going to move slower.
All right.
And just has to.
I want to get to Jerry. Thank you for waiting patiently out there for us. You wrote in to us with a question about your Yahoo Mail being hacked. Am I right, Jer?
That is correct.
All right. So you sent a message to change your password a few weeks ago. It failed. Tell us where you are at right now.
Right now, I still am at the same position I was before where I can get into my email account. I had called Yahoo, and they had indicated there that they had many calls there regarding accounts there, and they couldn't take my call at the present there. And they had sent me to some message centers there. I went to the message centers and was told that a new email information would be sent to an old email account, which I cannot access.
Oh, my.
So are you saying your account was actually hacked, or that you received a notice from Yahoo basically saying, please change your password because of our problems we've been experiencing, and you ignored the message and now you don't have the ability to change your password? I mean, that's what I got on the email.
That is correct. The email was locked up on me, and I cannot get in.
Gotcha.
Get a new email password.
And you said when you called Yahoo, did you actually physically speak to a person that said they were receiving so many phone calls that they can't address you?
Or there was a message on the
screen. It was
the
message, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I can believe that. And so you tried their 866-920-9158. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. If you've had a Yahoo account for a long time, one of the ways that you would reset it is set up an alternate email address. And unfortunately, that alternate email address is invalid now. What happens to a lot of people that have had an account, what Yahoo also does now is they ask you 5 questions is another authentication method. But for users that have had the same account for the last 10 years, they skipped that. They've been using the same password for a long time. They never went into their account settings and set their 5 questions up or chose their 5 questions with answers, so they cannot use that method. So I don't know of another way that he could get his password reset than speaking with a physical person.
Cal? Yeah, and when you got the Yahoo account, did you just sign up for that Yahoo account by going to yahoo.com, or did you get it through an internet provider like my Yahoo account I got through SBC?
My Yahoo account.
So you just went in and signed up for it? You didn't get it through your internet provider?
No, I just signed up to it there over the internet. Yeah.
Who is your internet provider, by the way?
At the present, it's WOW.
Yeah, see, if he was with AT&T, then he would actually be able to call them, and they would actually give them physical.
Can he call them
support
and pretend he's before? Maybe they'll respond. No, I guess not.
He's got nothing to lose from a try, but I wouldn't. I don't know if it'll work.
Wow.
But because I just dumped. Are you ready for this? My dial-up account, and they told me you'll have to get all your support through the web from now on.
Well, that's what I've been getting through the web there, but it just isn't working here, because of the canceled old email account.
I tell you what, Jared, hang on a second. We're going to give us a little more thought and see if we can come back and give you some other options as well, all right? So hang on there. We'll be back with Jerry and help you out as well. We'll tell you how to do that in just a little bit here on the Internet Advisor. Well, this is Foster Brown, a co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. I want to thank the folks who are our unsung heroes. That is Shannon Maley, who is our engineer here and helps to pull everything together as we do our programs. Thank you, Shannon, so much. And Annie Nichols, our ladies of the phone, who is the pleasant voice that's greeting you and helps us to organize the folks who are with us online, like our friend Jerry, who is joining us. And we've been talking about your email account, your Yahoo account, that an older one that just kind of disappeared and you lost the password to it and can't find your way back in. Guys, were there some thoughts that you wanted to add to me as kind of as a final thought to help Jerry, who finds himself in this situation, and maybe other folks who find themselves with an older email account and wondering, might I lose this?
I think the first thing that you might want to do, and maybe too late for Jerry, unfortunately, is first of all, get whatever email account that you're using, make sure that if you can set up a verification security questions, you should go in and immediately and do that right now.
Like your pet, what was your first pet, your mother's maiden name?
Where did you have your first date at, sort of thing. Set those all up first, get those done.
Well, and the other thing is also to confirm the information that's in there. Here, what is your current alternate email address that we may send? You know, because I just did that on one of my accounts recently, and I'm like, I don't have that address anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Very good point.
So just verify all the information, or if you don't have an alternate email address, get an alternate email address as well so that you have that set up.
And some of them work by text messaging, too. So set up a cell phone for text messaging.
It's called dual identification, Jerry, and what happens is they will send you you have the option of having them send you a text message with like a 5-digit number that you then enter as the dual identification.
And unfortunately, it might be his only mechanism is to continue hammering away at Yahoo until he can get his password reset. There's no other way to get through it.
Yeah. Jerry, could you just simply say, sigh, that's it, and write the whole thing off? Or is there stuff in there that is really valuable to you that you need to keep on hunting for?
Well, I get many emails there from the church there and friends there, and I was just trying to save them.
Right.
And also on my notepad, I had a lot of memos in there from Friendster and people. I've lost everything there.
Yeah, so you also lost their email addresses, too.
Correct.
So so have you got an alternate email account, you know, anyways?
I opened up a new Yahoo email account, and I did open up an alternate one. I did learn my lesson.
Yeah, okay, good. This is
very good. Very important. Good. And the alternate, guys, what does the alternate serve for again, just to reinforce this for our listeners?
Well, just in case his primary email account gets locked like his did, the alternate email account is there so that they can verify, send him a code to the alternate email account so he can unlock the primary
account. And one of the options would also be to put put a cell phone number, right?
Cell phone number and security questions, too. Right. So when you set up the new Yahoo email account, did it actually challenge you to enter in alternate email accounts and questions and answers?
Chose me for both the cell phone number and then also another email.
Oh, okay. So it did not go through the five questions and answers. Okay.
That's a dual identification now. The dual you'll hear this term, dual identification, and that's what they're talking about.
Okay.
That you have the identification through both of those ways. I guess maybe you can start with some of those friends in the church that you have and see if they would be willing to send you their address book. Jer?
Yes, we will be contacting one of the church representatives there to take and do that to us, sir. But I just thought I would first toss it around and see if I could get the old email addresses.
And what you maybe in a few weeks to a month, you'll have better luck. I mean, that's really all you can do is wait till someone at Yahoo that you could speak to allows you to change that password,
and keep, if you'll ever
be able to.
Yeah, and keep on hammering away at that. But we certainly can feel your pain on this. Unfortunately, it sounds like, guys, that, you know, once
it is a free account. If you are paid, they provide a different phone number to people that have paid accounts.
That I don't know there. I just submitted the one that they had requested.
Yeah. And inevitably nowadays, I don't think you get a person. Has anybody gotten a human being when you've called one of those numbers? I don't know. Did you get a human being?
No.
Oh, Shannon's raising her hand. She actually got a human being. You did? On Yahoo, Shannon? Oh, my goodness. Shannon is nodding her head. She said that she actually got to talk to a human being.
Well, you know, you know what you might want to do if you're in Britain, though? Gary said, bring this up. And I'm like, I don't want to bring this up. But apparently British, it was just released through the Snowden information that was released by Snowden, that the British government has been also tapped into Yahoo out there and captured tens of thousands of images of people from their cams that do face chats and stuff like that.
They turned on the camera.
They turned the camera on remotely, turned the camera on your computer.
Yeah. And people that would do web chats too. Oh, and even the British government was surprised at how many people send nude pictures to each other on chats.
Oh,
it's
my
just,
Lord.
They were astounded that, you know, 25% of all the photos through these
25%?
Yes. Were of people exposing themselves to other people on
this
on
island
chats.
Has a problem with boredom. They got to get off that island.
Well, needless to say, Yahoo is really seriously upset about this and of course sent them a letter and anyways, put a piece of tape over your camera.
Well, I don't know that that's going on. Is it going on anymore? I don't know. Gary, what can you do to make sure that you're not being observed by somebody other than put a piece of tape over them?
No comment.
Well, see, what happens is if your camera's active, there's a light that lights up next to your camera.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
And these people were doing chats, and they were sending the pictures to the people at the other end. So it wasn't as if they were being invoked.
I see. While they were in a chat, this is when it got picked up.
Yep.
But you can. If you've ever watched The Good Wife on TV, there was a scene in which suddenly the camera light went on, and somebody was, you know, had hacked in and was using the camera to observe people in the room.
Yep.
So I guess it's possible to do. My Lord, we are living in this terribly paranoid existence, aren't we now? Mm-hmm. Jerry, are you feeling paranoid?
Well, at times, sir, you never know what's going to.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, Jerry, I don't know that we've been able to solve your problem for you, certainly, in getting those old email addresses. You're going to have to do a lot of working around that. But as Eddie was saying, keep on hammering away every now and then, going back to Yahoo and see if you can get that back. And you may catch, as Shannon did, a human being on the other end who can help you around that. But in the meantime, it sounds like you've taken some good steps, which is to get that alternate email address so that they can get in there and give you the recovery information and also give them a cell phone number so they can give you a code that you can use to get back in and authenticate yourself. And that really is the key.
And as Kel said, this is a reminder to anyone that's had an email account for a long time, change your password, review your security settings.
Absolutely. And Cal, one of the other things I think you said is to make sure you have another place that you're keeping this information as well.
Yeah. If you got something that you really, really, really want to keep, whether it's a document or a picture or a voice, whatever it might be, whatever that piece of data might be, not only do you keep it up in the cloud in your email address, but also copy and put it onto like an external hard drive and store that way somewhere safe so you have a second chance of recovering the information that you need.
Hey, Jared, one final question. Where do you keep your contacts?
Well, it's under the contacts.
In your contact folder, right?
Correct.
Wouldn't that have all of your email in there?
Not under the new one, no.
So he's saying within the web-based mail application, he had it under the contacts.
I got it.
He doesn't have it anymore.
I got
correct.
It. So rather than it was in the cloud rather than being on his computer.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then it sounds like you need to make sure that you've got a copy on your computer, as Cal was saying before. Jerry, hey, thank you so much for giving us that email. I hope we've been able to help you a little bit with this and maybe give a fair warning to other people out there. Take care of yourself, Jerry. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right. And if you'd like to send us a question that we can handle both here on the air or off, go to our website, internetadvisor.net, look for the Contact Us button, click on that, and then, like our two guests, Bob and Jerry, send us your email. And there have been other ones that have come in this week that we've been able to answer, and those are the ones we were able to pick out today and talk with them. We hope to talk with them and other people out there as well in the near future. So please do get hold of us through that Contact Us button. Also, don't forget that the show notes and all the other information about our program are posted on Sunday nights at internetadvisor.net. Thank you very much to Gary, to Ed, and to Cal, and for all of you out there for allowing us into your life. This is Foster Brown, hoping you have a great week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.